A new film is out featuring Kelly McGillis, Liam Neeson, Aidan Quinn, Gabriel Byrne, and Brenda Fricker. But you never see those actors. Instead, they and many more are the voices of Irish immigrants to the United States from the times in the 19th century when famine in Ireland set off sojourns across the sea to today when unemployment has once more made these shores a spot just over the horizon to many Irish.
Well, now that I'm titled a United Man, no more can I stay in my own native land. Oh, the sails, they're all set, and the wind, it blows fair. Oh, he's gone, God be with him, he's the rambler from Clare.
That's Mick Maloney, and the film Out of Ireland is a documentary by Paul and Ellen Casey Wagner. It will be broadcast by the Public Broadcasting Service. It already has a companion book out called Out of Ireland, The Story of Irish Immigration to America. Paul Wagner joins us in the studio. Help us explore the idea that immigration has, in a sense, it's always been central to just the Irish way of living.
It really has. The Irish have been immigrating for centuries, but the greatest immigration really was to this country in the mid-19th century and into the early 20th century. Over 7.5 million Irish people came out of Ireland to America over that time.
One of the points you make is that, of course, you know, we think today of much of Ireland as a rural, bucolic, a beauteous place, as well it can be, but the fact is it was very overcrowded when immigration began.
Exactly. We do think of it today as idyllic and basically an agricultural economy, which it is to a large extent. But the fact is, in the mid-19th century, the population of Ireland was huge. There were twice as many people there as there are now. And even the rural areas were congested, and immigration was an imperative for those people.
The Irish word, or the word in the Irish language for immigration,
right.
Let me get you to explain that.
Yeah. The word in the Irish language to describe an immigrant was jury. And the interesting point about that is that the word jury didn't mean immigrant in the sense we understand it, which is someone who chooses to leave their homeland. Rather, it meant exile, someone who was forced to leave. And it was a very strong psychological force that was used, actually, by nationalists in Ireland to encourage funds to be sent back to Ireland to support the nationalist cause. And it was also used in a more familial way, if you will, more personal way, to encourage sending funds back to support the family, to support the parents who had been left, or the brother or sister who were still at home.
As someone whose childhood has many pleasant moments, dare I say it, of Irish wakes, I was intrigued by the fact that when families would leave Ireland, they would hold a wake.
Exactly. We tend to think of the wake as associated with the death of someone. But you have to understand that, particularly in the late 19th century, for an immigrant to leave Ireland was as if they had died, because that family would never see them again.
Oh, no.
Now, if I might step in out of my own cheap anecdotal experience, nothing like that was ever sung at an Irish wake I ever went to in our family. And I mean, they were the old songs, Sullivan, spelled Sullivan, that sort of thing.
Right.
They were, dare I say it, drinking songs and joyous songs.
Exactly. Those were the songs that we maybe would associate more with the Irish-American community. Mm-hmm. The wailing, the keening is actually what it's called, that we heard, is associated more with the late 19th and early 20th century in Ireland. It's pretty much died out. That was an archival recording that we managed to find to represent that.
We want to play another section from your film, a letter home written to by a man named Tim O'Brien to his family in Belfast, which maybe can help us understand what the United States looked like.
January 1921, New York. No one here shines his own shoes, but has it done every day for 10 cents in a shine parlor? We eat in automatic cafes. You put in a nickel or a dime and pull out your favorite dinner from a machine. Or sit in a high stool at a lunch counter and have a hash slinger shoot at you. I'm starting for South America tomorrow.
Now, let's explain. This is a fascinating character, Tim O'Brien, who goes to South America, goes to Hollywood, and then, just disappears.
Absolutely. He somehow gets caught up in the fast lane of 1920s America, is full of himself. He loves America. He can't get enough of it. At the same time, of course, not unlike many Irish immigrants, he has a strong attachment to home. He writes religiously back to his mother. But suddenly, on a ship through Cuba, he disappears. And we feel certain he met a sad end, because I know he would never have stopped writing his mother those postcards.
I guess I feel that we dare not forget that not so long ago there were signs that were hung up in this country saying no Irish allowed,
exactly.
Irish out, that the Irish were the victims of absolute dedicated discrimination.
Right. We have a section in the book and in the film called No Irish Need Apply. And this was a phrase that was commonly used in shop windows advertising for help or in newspaper advertisements. The thing I think that is amazing about the Irish immigrants, however, is the fact that they turned that prejudice on its head. One of the most popular songs of the 1870s was a song called No Irish Need Apply, composed and sung and popularized by an Irish American. In other words, they turned their amazing sense of humor and spirit to turning this prejudice, anti-Irish prejudice, on its head. And that really is how they triumphed, that with a lot of help from Irish politicians and the laboring jobs, of course.
You tell the story of a man named Timothy Cashman, who at one point, after being in the United States for, I think 30-some years?
That's right.
Returns to Ireland.
Exactly. I chose to end the film with the story of Timothy Cashman because, to me, he sums up a lot of the paradoxes about the experience of Irish immigrants in America. This was a guy who totally saw himself as an exile, hated to leave Ireland, longed throughout his 30 years in America to return to Ireland. But in fact, when he does go back in 1925, he finds that really there's nothing in Ireland for him. All of his friends and neighbors have immigrated or died. He goes to the home where he grew up, and now it's nothing but a cow shed. And he realizes that, for better or worse, he has become an American.
Where did you find all these old songs?
Well, Mick Maloney, who does a lot of the singing in the film, was a terrific resource. He's a folklorist and musicologist, as well as a musician and performer, and was really a walking archive of Irish and Irish-American music.
I'd like to make room to play what became my favorite song in the film.
Great.
If we could, by Mick Maloney, and it's a song telling the people of Ireland that if they come to the United States, they'll sure recognize the place.
There's a typical Tipperary, a typical Dublin Bay, well, a typical County Kerry in the good old USA. Although you're many miles from where the shamrock rolls, you'll find an Irishman no matter where you go. They've got Irish on the screen, even the money here is green. Cardinal Gibbons, he runs the show, and George Meany, he helps us to get all the dough.
Mick Maloney, from the documentary Out of Ireland, which will be broadcast on PBS stations later this year. We spoke with one of its creators, Paul Wagner, who is also co-author with Kirby Miller of the companion book Out of Ireland, The Story of Irish Emigration to America.
Harley and Mayor Daly, Joe McCarthy and Eugene O'Neill. There's Keaton and Kelly and Kelly and Hart and Mother Jones, Abu, George M. Cohen and there's Spencer Tracy too. Jimmy Cagney and Bing Crosby, the Kennedy brothers too. And they're Irish through and through. If you want an Irish treat, you'll march up and down Delancey Street. You'll think that you were home in Ireland.